Maine's children's museums. For most Maine schools, next week is February vacation week. And as families look for something to do, many of them will descend on Maine's children's museums, which have planned special events for the week. There are four children's museums in Maine, and two of them, the Maine Children's Museum and Theater in Portland and the Children's Discovery Museum in Augusta, have big plans to move and expand in the coming year. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Just what is a children's museum anyway? What's their mission and how do they stay relevant in this fast-paced digital age? Today on the show, we'll meet the dedicated leaders of Maine's children's museums and learn how they're planning for the future. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Children's museums combine learning, interaction, and fun for kids and families all over Maine. We are going to learn about the greater role these places play in the community and how they're changing and adapting for the future. Joining me in the studio, Suzanne Olson. She is Executive Director of the Maine Children's Museum and Theater of Maine in Portland. Amarinda Keyes is Executive Director of the Children's Discovery Museum in Augusta. And joining us from our Bangor studio, Niles Parker, Executive Director of the Maine Discovery Museum in Bangor. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you frequent any children's museums? What do they mean to your community? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Are all of you ready for next week?
We're ready.
Yes. Children's. You're happy. You're
smiling.
We are. We love it.
You're smiling. You like hundreds, maybe thousands.
We do.
Okay. Good. It's nice that there are people like you in the world who are looking forward to hundreds of children descending on the Children's Museums of Maine. Let's first hear about the children's museums each of you represent. Suzanne, let's start with you. The Children's Museum of Theater of Maine is probably the biggest and best known in the state. What are some of the distinguishing traits of the museum?
Oh, I think probably for us, the theater is the distinguishing trait. In 2008, we merged with the Children's Theater of Maine, so we have a theater space, and we do five main stage productions a year for kids by kids.
Four kids by kids. So the kids decide what to put on.
They do, and they're the actors. So they're the actors, and they're also kids in the audience.
Okay. Amarinda, tell me about yours.
Sure. So we're not quite as big as the Portland Museum, but we have a beautiful little space in Augusta, Maine right now, and we really focus on sort of our younger kids. We see a lot of 3-, 4-, or 5-year-olds. We like to have opportunities for imaginative play, you know, pretending to be a construction worker or, you know, role-playing what you see mom and dad do at the grocery store, sort of things like that.
Okay. And Niles, your turn. What about the Maine Discovery Museum in Bangor? What makes it special?
So just last week, we celebrated our 18th birthday of the Discovery Museum. We opened in the old Freeze's department store in downtown Bangor, and at the time of opening, storefronts on both sides of us and across the street were empty, and not anymore. I think we've been a real economic driver for downtown. And we do much like Amarinda suggested, really focus on play, on creative programming, let kids be kids. And our most recent initiative is really turning more towards science and STEM programming. Our biggest program in that regard is the Maine Science Festival, which will celebrate its fifth year in March.
Okay, so I'm going to ask a question I'm going to throw to all three of you. What is a children's museum anyway? It's not a museum like we think of an art museum or a natural history museum. It's not some place where people walk around with their hands behind their backs looking at pictures. Why does it have the name museum, Suzanne? And what's a defining trait of a children's museum?
Why does it have the name museum? I have no idea, in reality. We're not collections-based organizations. I think we really see ourselves as educational places, but with a focus on learning through play and really child-focused, but families coming together to learn and play together.
The first thing we always say to families when they come in is, you can touch anything you see. Right. You can play with anything you want. This is a place for you to explore in any way, really, that you want.
Niles?
Yeah, I think that's critical. I think the idea that you're creating a self-directed, free-choice learning environment that is social at its core, that allows children to explore and be creative and ask questions and play with their parents or their grandparents or with their siblings. There are no rules. They can just explore.
Suzanne, you have led the Children's Museum and Theater of Maine for more than 18 years, mm-hmm. and it's pretty big news that you are retiring. What changes have you seen over the years, not only in exhibits, but in the way that the museum thinks about the children that come?
I think the biggest change is really how the world thinks and country thinks about children's museums. In the early days of children's museums, they were collections-based places as well. And I think over the last couple of decades, there are more and more children's museums in the country. And I think the focus on early learning in all dimensions is much greater than it has been in the past.
What have we learned recently, Amarinda, about early learning and how children's museums play a role in that?
We're in a really exciting space because we have sort of the creative freedom to try different things and do different things and be paying attention to latest research and sort of try it out. And the children's museum is a great place to experiment. You know, we don't have rules. We don't have the sort of pressures that a school might have. And so it's really just an exciting place to be connecting children with research, trying things out, really just kind of being an innovative hub.
So tell me about a piece of innovation, an experiment that worked really well and maybe one that didn't.
Yeah, I mean, we like to do a lot of sort of science and STEM-based types of programs. So, like, you know, fun things to do are, you know, if you wanted to teach a child, for instance, how plants grow, we might give them a bunch of silly different materials and one of them being soil and have the kids, you know, plant something in all different types of materials. And then they kind of just watch and sort of see how things grow. And, you know, they won't grow in cement, but they would grow in soil and sort of things like that. So really the child is kind of in control of what's going on and kind of putting together their own experiments. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And it's kind of a fun kind of an environment to be able to teach kids in that way.
Niles, how are you all learning using recent knowledge about early childhood and early childhood learning in your museum?
Well, certainly on one hand, the idea of reaching kids at an earlier age, we know is really important in terms of how it helps to formulate their brains and the circuitry within them. But one thing we're really cognizant of is that we are not a school. What you start to see happen when kids hit age 5 and get into school is that it suddenly becomes this sort of rigorous, very scheduled learning experience, and that people, you know, think they're going to school to learn. There are studies coming out that show, one study in particular that I'm thinking of called the 95% solution, that shows only 5% of your time for most Americans is spent in school. Most of your learning, 95%, happens outside, and museums, libraries, community organizations like that really play a huge role in that process.
Joining me on the line now is Elise Huff. She's the program coordinator for the Coastal Children's Museum in Rockland. Thanks for calling in, Elise.
Hi, Jennifer.
Tell me about your museum.
So we're the Coastal Children's Museum. We sit right on the water in Rockland. So while we have a lot of the stuff that other museums have, like the grocery stores and the little vet's clinic where kids can take care of stuff, we like to focus on marine-oriented things. So we have fish tanks, we have a touch tank, we have a sailboat, and we have a little stage that's all meant to look like you're underwater. And so we focus on the younger kids as well. About 18 months, kids come in and start toddling around. If they can walk, they can have fun here.
How much of a role does the Coastal Children's Museum play in your community?
So we are a great resource to the families in the community and other organizations. We have heard countless number of parents walk through our doors and say, you know, thank goodness you're here. I don't know what I would do with my child if you weren't here, because especially in the winter in Maine, it's nice to have a place inside where kids can be active and play. But we also like to partner with other organizations in the community. So we have them come do programs with us. We also have a few organizations who come and use us as a therapy tool, and come and they get to work with the parents and the children and teach the parents how their children learn and so on and so forth.
So I'm going to keep you on the line for a minute, Elise. I'm going to ask all four of you what the favorite exhibit is. I'm going to guess, Suzanne, that it's the fire truck.
I think you're right.
Yeah, the grocery store might be a close second.
Grocery store actually now is a farmer's market, and that's popular too. But it
shows how old my kids are.
But the fire truck is absolutely the most popular.
Okay, what about you?
I guess, you know, vehicles must be a popular thing, because I think for us, we've got like a real skid steer in our space with, like, you know, the engine removed. The kids love climbing all over that.
All right, what about you, Niles? What's the biggest exhibit at the Maine Discovery Museum in Bangor?
So I could probably say vehicle as well, but with a truck and a fire truck. But I think I'm going to go with a treehouse, a two-story treehouse that kids can climb up.
All right. And Elise, what's the most popular exhibit at the Coastal Children's Museum?
I would have to say probably our grocery store is a big favorite, because there's just so many things to pick up and move around and play with. But also in the vehicle area, our sailboat is also a big hit with kids.
All right. Well, thanks so much for calling in. That was Elise Huff with the Coastal Children's Museum in Rockland. And I want to mention that there's a quick link on our Facebook page to the web pages of all of the museums we're talking to today. Suzanne, I want to follow up, though, on something that Elise said, which is she was talking about working with students that may have some special needs. And that has become a big focus of the museum in Portland as well. Talk about some of the populations that you have reached out to make a special effort to include and how you've done that.
Many years ago, I had a mother who was a volunteer at the museum say to me that she couldn't really bring her child who was on the autism spectrum, that the stimulation was just, he was very difficult to take into public spaces, and how sad she was that she was working for our organization as a volunteer and couldn't bring her child, which really gave us the impetus to think about how could we create times and spaces for all kids. So we developed something called Play Our Way, which is a program we do outside of regular museum hours, where we invite families with children on the autism spectrum or other challenges to come for free and play in the space, and with the hope that over time they'll be able to stay longer and be there with other kids.
Mm, so it's quieter, the lights are lower.
We adjust the lights. We do several kind of easy modifications within our space. And as we're creating our new building, we are very excited that all of our new exhibits will be ADA accessible, which is something very challenging but also very exciting.
And I'm going to come back to that in just a minute, but I want to give you, Niles, and you, Amarinda, a chance to talk about some of the work you might do that's, you know, beyond just opening the doors and letting the general public come in. Niles, you go first.
Yeah, thanks. I'm glad you asked that question, because I could follow up with a very similar response to Suzanne's, and that is we do a program called My Day to Play, where we close a little early on Sunday afternoons. And verbatim to what Suzanne said, we invite families with children on the autism spectrum to come, and we turn the lights down or some of the sounds down, and we have staff who are trained. And we've had resource fairs there with people from the University of Maine to provide materials to parents, and a chance for families just to meet other families and to talk about the journey they're on. It's been a very, very popular program.
Amarinda?
Yeah, you know, we actually don't have a program like that right now, but definitely something I'm interested in doing, especially with our new facility as well. I guess this is a kind of a fun program that we did that was unique. We brought teens, actually, from the Boys and Girls Club to come help teach science programs with little kids, which is kind of a neat opportunity to get like a different age group into the museum and participating in a sort of a different way. So that was really wonderful. But Yeah, I'm interested in implementing something like this in our new space.
Okay, so both Suzanne and Amarinda, you all have dropped little hints about what we're going to talk about next. And both of you are undergoing great big projects. You're both expanding and moving your museum. Suzanne, you mentioned Thompson's Point. This is going to be quite a change.
It is going to be quite a change. Basically, what's happened with us is we feel like we've outgrown our space. And so over the last several years, we've been seeking and finding and then doing planning for a new building that will be about double the size of our current space.
And you will be building a new building,
we
correct?
We will be building a new building.
Wow. And you said ADA accessible, easy to park.
Easy to park. And just a building that will be a building that was meant to be a children's museum from its onset. You know, we all are in spaces where we have modified other kinds of buildings to be spaces for children. So it's very exciting to. We've also really tried to focus on ways that we can appeal to the whole family, thinking about those adults who come with their children.
And maybe more benches?
More benches. Just easier, hopefully easier access for everything.
Okay, Amarinda, tell us about your plans.
Yeah, so we're very excited. Our organization is 26 years old and has never really grown sort of in capacity or square footage. And so we're embarking on the first real big growth for our organization in that history. We are looking to move into a space that's in Waterville, which is about 25 minutes north of where we are now. And it's going to be basically double the exhibit space to what we have now. And then also it's going to, you know, allow us to be a bigger organization so we can offer more programs and reach a larger community, continue to do all the programming we do in Augusta, and then also expand up into Waterville too. So exciting time for growth.
So where are you in the process?
So we have secured our location and we have just begun the fundraising.
Okay, so you have the location, but no construction yet. You have to raise the money first. Same with you, Suzanne?
So we've done a little bit of work to prepare our site, but we're still working on fundraising, and we've done the design of the exhibits and the building.
All right, and what's the timetable for each of you?
So we'd like to think that we'd start construction this spring if we can get to our financial benchmark.
And what about you, Amarinda?
Ours is a little longer. We're hoping to start construction later this year.
All right. Well, we are going to take a quick break. If you'd like to join the conversation about children's museums in Maine, the phone number 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Evergreen Home Performance, helping homeowners address climate change with energy audits, window replacement, and insulation. More at evergreenyourhome.com.
The scandals engulfing Virginia have left Americans wrestling with what is and isn't compatible with public service.
It's fine for politicians to want to learn about their racism, but I don't want them doing it while working on my dime.
That's next time on The Takeaways, Politics with Amy Walter from WNYC and PRI.
You can listen to The Takeaway this evening at 7 here on Maine Public Radio. Have you subscribed to The 10 yet? The 10 is Maine Public's free weekly emailed newsletter, our curated look at 10 exceptional, thought-provoking, and compelling stories, not necessarily from the front page, that you may have missed during the week, chosen from Maine Public, NPR, PBS, American Public Media, PRX, the BBC, and more. To sign up or to read past issues, go to mainepublic.org and click on the news dropdown. Enjoy.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the role of children's museums. Joining me in the studio, three executive directors. Amarinda Keyes is with the Children's Discovery Museum in Augusta, Niles Parker with the Maine Discovery Museum in Bangor, and Suzanne Olson with the Maine Children's Museum and Theater of Maine in Portland. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Joining me on the line now is Christopher Sullivan. He is an assistant professor at St. Joseph's College. Christopher, thanks for calling in. Tell us what you teach and how that relates to children's museums.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for having me. Here at St. Joseph's, I teach art and design, and As an art professor, I bring my work as an exhibits developer into the classroom. I also have a post at the Children's Museum where I am the exhibits director. So I'll bring the design process that I use at the museum into the classroom. For example, last week I gave a lecture on universal design and the accessibility work that we're doing for the new space at Thompson's Point. And I find that sort of sharing this work helps show the students that the same processes that they're learning in the classroom can be applied at a much larger scale.
So are some of your students actually doing projects that will end up in the new museum?
Yeah, so I regularly bring the students into the museum work, and we'll do that either through class projects or internships. I currently have an intern here that's helping us at the museum and theater. She's a bio and art double major, and she's helping us with programming, graphic design, and interactive prototyping around our Touch Tank exhibit.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for calling in. That's Christopher Sullivan, an assistant professor at St. Joseph's College. We'll go up to Andrew in Bangor. Hi, Andrew. Go ahead.
Hey, how are you doing?
Great.
Oh, yeah, I was just calling in to say I'm a 23-year-old guy. I just recently finished school, and I think that the children's museums provide a nice way to keep yourself youthful, not really get caught up in corporate too quick. You know, I work the week, and then I go there on the weekend to kind of remind myself, hey, I'm still young. We're still kicking. Things are all right.
So, Andrew, what's your favorite exhibit at the museum? What do you do when you're there?
I tell you, I'm a 6'2", lanky, tall guy, but nothing beats a treehouse.
Well, there you go, Niles.
I told you. Yeah. I thought so.
Yeah. Oh, thanks so much.
I have to tell you that I am not 6'2", and on several occasions, I've almost found myself stuck up on the top level of the treehouse. It's not easy navigating in there.
Andrew, thanks for calling in. We're going to go to Mary Lena, who's calling from Wilton. Hi, Mary Lena. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. My name is Mary Lena Chaffin, and I just wanted to call in and talk about the Western Maine Play Museum, which is an upstart museum that is going to be opened in Wilton this summer. We've been 5 years busy fundraising, and we are in the midst of construction and doing our search for our executive director position at this point. I've been a member of the board for 4 years, and I just think that play museums offer a great alternative for the people have already mentioned the rigorousness and the structure that schools have had to really take on their path with all of the test-based results that they're trying to go after. I think play museums offer a great alternative, and we're really hoping that having a play museum accessible to the Western Maine community is going to be able to benefit a lot of the families out this way who would otherwise have to travel a pretty good distance to get to some of the museums that have been established. So anyway, I think that all the museums in our state do great work, and I'm looking forward to checking out the spots when the folks in Augusta move, and for the Maine Museum down in Portland as well. So that's really exciting news.
Mary Lena, I'm so glad you called in. What is your expected opening date for Western Maine Play Museum in Wilton?
We're hoping for an opening date in July, definitely by the first weekend in August. We're working really, really tirelessly. And like I said, we're getting to the point now where we're looking to hire our executive director. And that person's really going to be integral in helping us define our specific opening date. But we're hoping to give some tours of the museum by June and July. So we've been working for such a long time, it's hard to believe we've finally got to the point that we have. But it's very exciting. So,
well, congratulations.
Great.
Thank you for calling.
If people are interested, they can check out westernmainplay.org, and we're also on Facebook. So thanks so much for taking my call.
Great. Thank you for calling. We're going to move on to Bangor and Amanda. Hi, Amanda. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I'm in Bangor, Maine, as well as one of the other callers, as well as one of the wonderful museums being featured on the show today. And the reason that I was calling was that I'm part of like a lot of mom groups online. And one thing I've seen a lot of moms mention is that they don't have the money to go to the Discovery Museum. And it just, I was wondering if the panel could discuss maybe like what funding is available for the low income mothers that want to like provide their children with the same experiences.
Sure. And Niall, since Amanda's calling from Bangor, I'll have you start.
Yep. Yeah, we have a couple of options that we can offer. One is we have programs with a number of libraries throughout the state that provide memberships through the library. So you can go and check out a museum pass, much like you would a book, and that entitles you to a free day's visit to the museum. Very, very popular. A lot of the libraries and towns in central, northern, down east Maine are members of that program, and that program is used a lot. We also do, though, provide scholarships to people. We have people who have a need and will fill out some forms, and that becomes known to us. We can, as funds allow, definitely provide discounted membership and or discounted admission or camp registration to some of our programs.
Yeah, we do the same thing. We have lots of library connections. You can do the same thing that you can do up there. We also have a scholarship program, so if anyone's looking for memberships, day passes, things like that, they can reach out to us, and we have a process for that. We definitely want anyone who wants to come to the museum to be able to come, and so we work really hard to fundraise for those opportunities so that we never have to, you know, exclude anybody.
And I suspect people are uncomfortable saying that at the front desk. Do you suggest they call if they...
Yeah, absolutely. Call, email, info@childrensdiscoverymuseum.org. Any way of getting in touch with us, and we would be happy to assist.
Suzanne?
Yes. Yep.
The Children's Museum Association has a program that's been going for a couple of years called Museums for All, which is an access program for all families. I think all of us really feel strongly that no child or family should ever be turned away. And so I can't imagine there's any children's museum in the country that wouldn't make provision for families to come. It's a really important part of our mission.
Okay. Amanda, that's great information for you, and good luck. Thank you for calling. I'm going to move to Paul in Pittsfield. Hi, Paul. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Hi, Suzanne. This is Paul, the Paul you know. I want to mention I'm a master Maine guide here working in Maine, and we will be coordinating with the Children's Museum and Theater of Maine in the coming month of March for a single day event, Meet a Maine Guide, where we'll have a registered Maine guide to demonstrate outdoor skills with outdoor gear like small tent, tarp, ropes, how to use knots and outdoor cooking, compass skills, paddles, and possibly a small canoe to interact with children and families and talk about canoeing, camping, outdoor skills, and safety, all in promoting the Maine Canoe Symposium. I want to put in a plug for that, which takes place on June 7th, 8th, and 9th, the weekend of June 7th, 8th, and 9th this year, 2019. That's the Maine Canoe Symposium. It'll be in Bridgeton, Maine, at Camp Winona on the shore of Moose Lake there. But it should be a fun day at the Children's Museum and Theater of Maine, where you can come in and meet one or more Maine guides and talk about these types of skills that people we will be embarking on coming into the spring season and the opening of the recreation boating season.
All right.
That's it in summation. Thank you very much for my comment.
Of course. Thanks, Paul, for calling. And Suzanne, an example of some of the unusual, or maybe not that unusual, but the variety of things that go on.
So I think next week in vacation week, we are having a beekeeper come. We have a live bees inside our museum who fly out and come back in. And so we'll have a beekeeper. And we also are having a wildlife rehabilitator, which is one of our favorite programs for families, who brings a variety of very unusual different things depending on what he's rescued in the last few days or weeks.
What have you got planned for next week, Amarinda?
Oh, we've got all sorts of things. We're actually unveiling for the first time in our museum our new mobile museum, which is like a traveling exhibit piece that we've recently done. So usually we just bring that out into the community, but we're actually going to set up everything in the museum on Monday. And then we've got some special guests, like a guy coming with different reptiles for the kids to see on Thursday. Friday we have a musician. So we definitely try to keep our program-heavy February breaks engaging for visitors.
And you talked about having a mobile exhibit, and I know that this is a bit of a trend with children's museums, not only a mobile exhibit, but also perhaps a satellite location, taking the museum to places where, you know, kids might not have access to it. Tell me, where does your mobile exhibit go and how often?
Yeah, so we just piloted it for the first time this past year. It was hugely successful. We reached over 1,000 kids and mostly going to different community events. We went to farmers markets, libraries, things like that. And this coming year, we're trying to expand that program really intentionally so we can reach specifically the children who aren't able to come into our museum.
So what is the mobile exhibit? What is it? Is it a car? Is it a...
if anyone has a car they would like to donate to it, that would be great. But no. But it is sort of these pop-up exhibit panels that have hands-on, mostly STEM-based activities. So there's like an acrylic wall. There's a ramps, balls, gears, things like that. All sorts of stuff. So it kind of pops up like walls so you can kind of walk into the space.
Okay, Niles, so what do you have planned next for next week in Bangor?
Yeah, so we have, in much the same vein, a whole variety of different programs. We have camps that we offer every day during vacation week so that if both parents are working, if they're looking for an option for their child. We've got camps with different themes each day that have been very, very popular. And then we do things like a regular programming, science explorings, and clay play, art-based programs like that. But it's one of the fun things about a children's museum, I think. Like Suzanne said, you can have a beekeeper one day and you can be making birdhouses the next day and doing computer programming the day after that. I mean, we try really hard to spread it out and create diverse offering. I would just build on what you were just talking with Amarinda about with the outreach and the museum on a road, something that we are seeing a huge demand for. Though we're not doing necessarily exhibits, we are doing outreach science-based programming with hands-on programs that we are delivering to kids in more rural parts of northern and downeastern Maine, and the demand is astonishing. Our programs grew by 400% in the last year, so there's a huge need there.
Suzanne, are you doing mobile exhibits?
So I think probably our most popular is our 40-foot inflatable humpback whale, Istar, which comes in a little package and you blow it up in front of kids and then it unzips and you can go inside and do programming. That's something we've had for a very long time, continues to be tremendously popular. I think for all of us, outreach is a really important piece. We're able to go into schools that have fewer resources and help supplement, especially in the science areas. And we also do that with theater programming, just been tremendously successful.
We'll go to Jessica, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Jessica. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call. I love this show today because I'm the mom of three kids who are much older now, but when they were little and I was a stay-at-home mom that was sometimes trapped in the house in the winter, the Children's Museum in Portland was just a lifeline for us, and it was such a great opportunity for the kids to socialize and also for the moms and dads to socialize. We sometimes spent 2 or 3 days there, and our whole day might revolve around the schedule for when the touch tank got opened so my daughter could check on the starfish. So thank you so much for, you know, just having that opportunity. But also I wanted to say that I'm a speech therapist and I work with preschool kids, and I always encourage my families to go visit the Children's Museum. It's just such an amazing opportunity for language development and growth and social interaction for kids who maybe don't go out into the world as much as would benefit them.
Jessica, thank you for your call. And you can hear the emotion in her voice that children's museums mean a lot to some people.
I think my favorite part of the museum is just it's a community space. You know, you see we have members that come every single week at the same time and they meet other families and there are relationships forming not just among the kids but among the parents as well. And it's a safe space. It's a place to connect with, you know, the resources in the community and build relationships with other people who are in similar situations to yourself.
Jessica, thanks for your call. If you would like to join the conversation about children's museums, our phone number 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Fallbrook Woods, a Maine-owned assisted living community in Portland, supporting the unique needs and individual styles of those with memory impairment. Fallbrookwoods.com. And Maine Community Foundation, where you can create your own charitable fund to benefit Maine. Learn more at mainecf.org.
1 year before the 2020 New Hampshire primary, a small town with an important place in that tradition takes a closer look at its voter rolls.
I was very excited to do so because of, first of all, my right to do so and the historical value of being first in the nation.
On Next from the New England News Collaborative, we'll look ahead to the big role the Granite State will play in this next year. Plus, we'll go to Martha's Vineyard for a discussion of race, racism, and police. Please join us.
Today at 2 here on Maine Public Radio.
This weekend is our second installment of Sound Bites in partnership with Frontier Studios. The theme? Grilled.
The train is empty and he does exactly what I think he's going to do. He sits right next to me. And he launches into conversation. It's like a Slovakian language. He's just mid-conversation.
Join us for another hour of stories told by Mainers and storytellers from across the country. That's Sound Bites. Sunday evening at 7 on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, the future of children's museums in Maine. Joining us, Niles Parker with the Maine Discovery Museum in Bangor, Suzanne Olson with the Maine Children's Museum and Theater of Maine in Portland, and Amarinda Keys with the Children's Discovery Museum in Augusta. We would love for you to join our conversation. Our number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. All three of you are nonprofits. How difficult is it to keep going year after year to raise the money you need?
It's difficult. we have a small budget. We have a lot of dreams, a lot of things that we want to do, but unfortunately, everything costs money. And so it's definitely about being strategic about what kinds of things that you focus on and then doing the things that you do really well.
Niles?
Yeah, well said. I think, I'm leaving here after this is over and going back and submitting two grants by the end of the day and be doing more next week. It's sort of always that race to try to find the support for the programming. But that being said, I mean, it's obviously awfully rewarding. And I think people and donors particularly realize that and realize the importance of these museums within the state of Maine and the educational opportunities they provide. So, you know, in a lot of ways, it's a lot of fun going to talk to people about what we do and why we need their help.
I think this is an exciting time, too, just because, I mean, you can see there's growth happening in all these children's museums in Maine right now, which I think just speaks to the fact that people are interested in children's museums. They see the value in it, and all of our organizations really are at a time of growth right now. And I think it's an exciting field to be in.
I think we
tend to... It's important, too, I think, if... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, Niles.
Well, I was going to say, I think it's really important for our state right now. You know, we keep hearing about the demographics of Maine and how we're aging and that our school age population is dwindling. And I think the more that we can create these kind of unique educational opportunities and have these wonderful organizations around the state for children and families to take advantage of, hopefully that will, you know, help raise awareness of people who are looking to move to Maine or stay in Maine. And just have the sort of opportunities that, you know, you might have in a state elsewhere or in a big city elsewhere. We have them right here.
So I think we've been humble people for a long time. We have all done a lot with a little because that's part of the creativity and the joy building that I think comes from the work we do with children and families. So I think one of the things we need to do always is to be able to say clearly and confidently to the world that we believe we're really important parts of the development, the social and emotional development of children and families together.
I have a question from Lucy. What are children actually doing at the museums, and how do these activities affect what's happening in their brains?
Well, as Fred Rogers always said, play is the work of childhood. Children are, they're learning if they're role-playing in the fire truck or in one of our other vehicles we talked about earlier. They're in charge of their world at that time. They're learning how to interact with each other. They're using their creative minds. 90% of brain growth and development happens before age 5. And if you think about that and you think about the fact that school starts at age 5, that you have lots of children who may not have those opportunities to grow and develop in the way they can without them.
Yeah, like just for instance, you know, we have like this small little exhibit. It's got sort of slats of wood that you can move around, and it creates a ball ramp for the child to drop the ball, which just seems frivolous maybe, but there's so many different things going on when a child is doing that. You know, their eyes are tracking the ball, which leads to, you know, supporting them reading eventually. There's, you know, exploration with gravity going on there. There's motor skills going on when they're moving things around. It's just every time a child is interacting with their world, they're developing.
So if the parent is sitting there on the bench thinking, oh my goodness, how long is my child going to do this, dropping the ball in the top and rolling out the back?
I'll give you a hint. It's going to be a while until they get bored.
but it's good. Their brain is learning and one can just sort of revel in that.
Exactly, exactly.
Right, and the repetition is incredibly important to that process.
Niles?
We often get asked about why we don't switch out all of our exhibits more often. And we are actually working on updating or replacing about 50% of our exhibits. But for a certain age group, having that repetition and the familiarity about when they come back and visit, we have many families who are repeat visitors to the museum, it's really important that they know that that will be there and they can go back and explore it from a different angle or try it again. And that repetition is really, really important. The building of the fine motor skills is really critical. I think at a time when, you know, so many interactions and at younger and younger ages are increasingly, you know, mediated by a screen, are digital, the fact that we can have hands-on, interactive places for kids to play and in a social setting where they're actually interacting with other human beings is massively important.
Okay, I have a practical question. It's the height of flu season. How do you keep all those exhibits clean?
You clean and you clean and you clean and you clean. You clean during the day, you clean at night, you make sure that you're using the very best products to do that work. You are researching all the time what's happening in your area in terms of communicable diseases, and really pay attention to that. I mean, everything, we also have all of us boxes where if it's been in a child's mouth, drop it in this box, and then it gets clean before it gets put out again.
But please, if your child is sick, keep them at home.
Yeah. Well, that's my follow-up question. Other than being sick, is there anything you wish parents or kids would not do when they're at your museum? Is there anything that drives you nuts?
It sometimes drives me nuts when a parent pulls their child away from something they're very engaged in. We don't actually see that happen too often, but sometimes we're just like, let them play.
We have a tweet from Casey.
I've got one.
Oh, go ahead, Niles. Oh.
Well, I was just going to say, I've got one, and I feel like I'm judging, and I don't mean it that way because I'm guilty as charged, and many times I know, but I wish I would see parents put their cell phones away more often and concentrate on their children and what they're doing. I can't tell you how many times the child is playing with something and looking for some feedback, and the parent's head is, you know, stuck in their device.
Go ahead, Suzanne.
So I would just challenge that a little bit. I certainly appreciate parent-child interaction, but I also feel like parents sometimes need a little bit of break themselves and being in a place.
Oh, amen. And as I said, I'm guilty as charged. Yeah. I get it. It happens so often that sometimes you just want to make sure they're seeing what their child's looking for, yeah. I guess.
A tweet from Casey. I work at the Pope Memorial Humane Society. We love working with the Coastal Maine Children's Museum in Rockland. The education we're able to provide along with socializing animals is beyond valuable. Thanks, Casey, for that tweet. Wondering, nationwide, how are children's museums doing? I know that you're both growing. Is that the case? Are we seeing children's museums sort of experiencing growth everywhere, or are in other states, are they closing?
No, I think they're growing everywhere. The Children's Museum Association is growing and growing. There are new startup museums all over the country. I think for a while we worried that there would be too many and we'd be competing with one another. I think we've given up thinking that and know that there's lots of room and opportunity for all kinds, all sizes and shapes and size and levels of sophistication.
And I think a children's museum is a fabulous resource anywhere. Right. So, I mean, there's no shortage of spaces that need children's museums, too. And there definitely is growth. I've, you know, participated in emerging museum programs that the association does, and it's always filled with tons and tons of people who are looking to start their own museums in their own communities.
It's true on the international level as well.
Right.
Suzanne, what is your role? I've been to the Children's Museum of Maine, though not for a while. My kids are older now. And I was really struck by some of the exhibits that really focused on diversity. What has been your role over the last 18 years as Portland's become a more multicultural city?
So when I came, I was so excited about that opportunity. I feel like Portland 18 years ago was exploding with new Mainers in a state where the racial diversity particularly has been so limited over the years. So I saw a really what I would consider an opportunity and a responsibility to try to bring families together. My experience is that what we're afraid of is what we don't know. And so the ability to bring families together as a community of learners focused on your children was really essential. And we've done a tremendous amount of work in that regard and have really been proud of that work.
And what about for new immigrants? Many of them are not from places that had anything like a children's museum.
Absolutely. So one thing we learned early is that we were not on the radar screen, and that was a good thing and a bad thing. The good thing is that we had the opportunity to make it to explain and help people understand what that meant. At this point, we're doing lots of work with the family shelter in Portland, where many new Mainers start their journey into the United States. We do educational programming at the shelter, working with visiting nurses who are there. And so our educators may be working with kids while the nurses are helping the families get situated. We think it's a tremendously important opportunity for all families, all children and all families to come together in a shared experience.
I think I'll wrap up the hour by asking, aside from growth, which both of your museums are embarking on, what do you see as the future of children's museums? 40 years from now, what is a children's museum going to look like? Is it going to be pretty unchanged or a different kind of place?
I think we're always trying to reflect the needs of our community. So as our community grows and changes in different ways, I think we respond to that. We've always seen ourselves as places where if there's a gap to fill, how do we help do that? That we're supporting the system of educating children, both as from a supporting families and supporting educational environments. And so I think it's hard to know what those things will be, but I think we're always trying to be responsive to those needs.
Amarinda?
Yeah, I mean, I think so too. It's hard to see, you know, things are changing constantly all the time, but I think we're in a position to want to change as needed. You know, there's children's museums look different all over the place, and that's because we are what our community needs.
Niles?
Well, I think the role of technology is going to be a huge factor, you know, down the road. None of us know what that looks like. I think it'll be our job to help kind of navigate that and walk a fine line. Obviously, use what we can, but do it in a responsible way. But I hope that children's museums will still provide that outlet for children and their families to escape from lives that have become so programmed and prescriptive. I think and I hope that children's museums will still be that place where you can come, take a breath, and play.
All right. Well, thank you all for being here today. That was Niles Parker, the executive director of the Maine Discovery Museum in Bangor. Suzanne Olson is executive director of the Maine Children's Museum and Theater of Maine in Portland. And Amarinda Keys, executive director of the Children's Discovery Museum in Augusta. We also heard from representatives of the museum in Rockland and the Future Museum in Wilton. And we'll have information about all of those on our Facebook page. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. This program will be broadcast again tonight at 8. All sorts of information is on our website for all of our programs, which is mainecalling.org. Our theme song was composed by Mike Jandreau, and Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.